Getting 195 countries to agree costs billions and takes forever. Now, getting countries to implement things costs billions. Getting them to sign papers is surprisingly cheap. Humans love signing papers. It makes them feel important. What treaties actually cost? NGO campaign budgets are rarely disclosed publicly because nonprofits guard their finances the way dragons guard gold. But we know enough to establish something surprising. Treaty campaigns run on pocket change. The Ottawa Treaty banning landmines took 14 months. It started with one staff member, Jody Williams, who grew a coalition to over 1,000 organizations across 60 countries. Canada committed $100 million Canadian over 10 years. International donors added $169 million in 1997 for mine action. 122 states signed. She won the Nobel Peace Prize. The Cluster Munitions Convention took about 2 years. A coalition of NGOs backed by a core group of seven governments bought 94 states to sign and over 1 million stockpiled munitions destroyed. The Arms Trade Treaty took a decade, but started with just three supporting governments. The Oxfam and Amnesty International Coalition published more than 50 reports and built support until 130 countries signed. The Nuclear Ban Treaty also took a decade of campaigning. ICAN ran the entire operation with five staff in a Geneva office, coordinating 468 partner organizations. 122 states voted yes. Another Nobel Peace Prize. Pattern. One woman with a phone convinced 122 countries to ban landmines. Five people in a Geneva office won a Nobel Prize. The NGO costs are a few million dollars per year. Government conference costs add $10 to $30 million. Total to get a treaty signed? $15 to $50 million. Your species spends more than that on Super Bowl ads for beer. Inflation adjusted to 2024 dollars. Using BLS CPI data, the Ottawa Treaty in 1997 had an original cost estimate of $15 to $25 million, which is $30 to $50 million in 2024, an inflation multiplier of about 2 times. The Cluster Munitions Convention in 2008 had an original cost estimate of $15 to $25 million, which is $23 to $38 million in 2024, an inflation multiplier of about 1.5. The Arms Trade Treaty in 2013 had an original cost estimate of $20 to $30 million, which is $27 to $41 million in 2024, an inflation multiplier of about 1.35. The Nuclear Ban Treaty in 2017 had an original cost estimate of $10 to $25 million, which is $13 to $25 million in 2024, an inflation multiplier of about 1.25. In today's money, treaty campaigns cost roughly $25 to $50 million, 2024 USD. That's less than 0.2% of the implementation cost. Banning landmines? About $40 million to get the signatures, and more than $5 billion to actually dig them up. The paperwork is the cheap part. The not exploding anymore part is where it gets expensive. Cost for a 1% health treaty. This one touches military budgets, the sacred cow of national sovereignty. Suggest moving 1% of the explosion money, and politicians look at you like you've asked to borrow their favorite child. So budget 3 to 4 times what landmines cost. Phase 1, pre-negotiations, coalition building, expert drafts, lasts 18 to 24 months and costs $8 to $12 million, funded by philanthropy, Gates, Open Philanthropy, etc., and champion governments. Phase 2, global campaign, platform, 3.5% consent, media, lasts 3 to 5 years and costs $45 to $80 million, funded by philanthropy and crowdfunding. Phase 3, diplomatic process, conferences, delegate travel, lasts 18 to 30 months and costs $15 to $25 million, funded by host governments and the UN Trust Fund. Phase 4, ratification drive, legal reviews, parliamentary aid, lasts 4 to 2 years and costs $5 to $8 million, funded by philanthropy. Phase 5, contingency, opposition management, is ongoing and costs $10 to $15 million for strategic communications and lobbying. Total, $83 to $140 million. The math. Signing the treaty, approximately $83 million. What the treaty unlocks? $27.2 billion per year, forever. That's a 300-to-1 return on paperwork. How to make governments sign things? Politicians move when they see A, voters demanding it, and B, political cover. Give them both. Prove public demand. Get 3.5% of the population, 280 million people, to say yes with verified identity. Harvard researcher Erica Chenoweth found that every nonviolent campaign with 3.5% plus participation succeeded. That's not activism, that's a mandate. 280 million verified humans is the kind of number that makes politicians suddenly remember they work for you. Prove it's safe. Peer-reviewed modeling showing every nation gains more in health savings than it loses in military spending. Politicians need cover the way vampires need darkness. Give them studies to wave around. Timeline to governments can't ignore this. With approximately $60 million in seed funding, you can reach treaty-ready status in 2 to 3 years. Platform, 280 million verified supporters, 3.5% threshold. Modeling, country-by-country impact analysis. Coalition, 120-plus supportive NGOs, and 5 to 10 champion governments. Once these assets exist, formal negotiations become inevitable, not because politicians want them, because ignoring 280 million people is the kind of career decision that leads to spending more time with family. You aren't buying a treaty. You're buying the machinery that makes the treaty inevitable. Political success probability. Economic analysis. To calculate expected value, you need to estimate the probability this actually works. This section documents the rationale for the 1% central estimate with a 0.1% to 25% confidence interval. Yes, the model assumes a 99% chance of failure. It's still a good bet. Stay with me. Even at a 1% probability of success, this intervention's expected cost per disability-adjusted life year, or DALY, of 17.7 cents is still 503 times more cost-effective than malaria bed nets at $89 per DALY. Bed nets are the gold standard of global health interventions. Historical precedents, the depressing table. The 0.7% Official Development Assistance, or ODA, target aimed for 0.7% of gross national income, or GNI, to foreign aid. About 20% of countries actually did it over more than 50 years. Scandinavia and Germany. That's basically it. The Kyoto Protocol set binding emissions targets. About 55% of countries complied initially, then it collapsed between 1997 and 2012. The U.S. never ratified. Canada withdrew. Classic. The Paris Agreement involves non-binding pledges. About 15 to 25% are on track since 2015. 195 countries signed. Maybe 40 meant it. The NATO 2% GDP defense target has been in place since 2014. About 32% of members have met it. Even the threat of being invaded wasn't enough. The EU Stability Pact requires a 3% deficit and 60% debt limit. It has been routinely violated since 1997. France and Germany broke their own rule. Pattern. International financial commitments achieve less than 25% meaningful compliance. Your species signs things and then doesn't do them. It's like a New Year's resolution, but for geopolitics. Why a 1% treaty is harder than most precedents? Let's be honest about the obstacles. This is not a chapter written by someone trying to sell you something. It is, but at least it's honest about the hard parts. It touches military budgets, and politicians would rather discuss their browser history than their defense budget. It requires ongoing annual allocation instead of a one-time signature, functioning like a gym membership for peace that is paid monthly forever. There is no immediate security threat to motivate governments without an active catastrophe, even though 150,000 daily disease deaths apparently doesn't qualify as one. The novel mechanism of military to health reallocation has never been done, and humans are suspicious of things they haven't tried before, which is odd for a species that also invented bungee jumping. A coordination problem exists because benefits require critical mass, meaning nobody wants to go first and everybody wants to go second. Why a 1% treaty might beat the odds? It is self-funding and creates health dividends that exceed the cost, meaning you make money doing this, which is unusual for moral obligations. It has bipartisan appeal because should we cure more diseases? Polls well across every political spectrum, which is shocking, I know. A referendum pathway can bypass government resistance through direct democracy, which is the one weird trick politicians hate. There are visible beneficiaries from the 150,000 daily disease deaths, making it hard to argue with the body count. Network effects mean each signing country makes the next more likely, as peer pressure is humanity's most reliable technology. Probability estimates. Economists would find the following defensible, and economists find very little defensible. For the pessimistic floor scenario, the probability is 0.1%. Everything goes wrong. Global crises, political gridlock, and possibly an asteroid. For the conservative central scenario, the probability is 1%. There is a 99% chance of failure, but it is still 503 times better than bed nets. For the optimistic ceiling scenario, the probability is 25%. A major crisis opens a political window, or humans just decide to be smart for once. The model uses central estimate 1%. Expected value even when you assume failure. At 1% probability of success, the expected ROI is 848,000 to 1, still positive, even assuming near certain failure. The expected cost per disability-adjusted life year, or daily, is $0.177, 503 times better than bed nets at $89 per daily. The downside is capped at about $1 billion, and you lose the cost of a nice yacht. The upside is unbounded, and you cure most diseases. Even assuming a 99% chance of total failure, this beats the gold standard of global health interventions. The math doesn't care about your pessimism. Why the treaty won't stop at 1%? Most international commitments stagnate after signing. You saw the depressing table. 0.7% official development assistance, or ODA, targets have been unmet for over 50 years. Kyoto abandoned, Paris missed. Your track record with follow-through makes goldfish look disciplined. So why would a 1% health treaty be any different? Because this time, people get paid. The 8-10-10 funding structure allocates 10% of treaty funding, $2.72 billion per year, to incentive alignment bonds, or IABs. These are securities that pay out when treaties expand, not just maintain. In other words, people get rich when more diseases get cured. Finally, a financial instrument that isn't morally bankrupt. The expansion mechanism. At the 1% treaty level, the annual IAB pool is $2.72 billion per year. Political pressure is strong, 10 times the size of the largest NGO budgets. At the 2% treaty level, the annual IAB pool is $5.4 billion per year. Political pressure is very strong, reaching the nation-state level. At the 5% treaty level, the annual IAB pool is $13.5 billion per year. Political pressure is overwhelming, equivalent to a major industry lobby. At the 10% treaty level, the annual IAB pool is $27 billion per year. Political pressure is unstoppable, as there is no historical precedent. Why this differs from every other treaty? 0.7% ODA failed because nobody made money when countries complied. The NGOs pushing for compliance have small budgets, compete with each other, and run on guilt. Guilt has terrible fuel efficiency. The 1% health treaty creates its own expansion lobby. Bondholders profit when the treaty expands to 2%, then 5%, then 10%. These aren't activists you can ignore at a dinner party. They're investors with quarterly earnings calls about curing diseases. The ratchet effect. 1. $2.72 billion per year flows to IAB holders pushing for 2%. 2. When 2% passes, $5.4 billion pushes for 5%. 3. When 5% passes, $13.5 billion pushes for 10%. 4. The political pressure for expansion accelerates with each success. Most treaties are gym memberships purchased in January and abandoned by February. IABs are the opposite. The constituency for expansion grows with each success. Greed doesn't take holidays. Long-term feasibility. With IABs, the 10% allocation creates a perpetual political engine, a machine that runs on greed and outputs health. Embarrassing, but effective. Without IABs, this joins Kyoto in the museum of things humanity promised to do and then didn't.